Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 672, October the 22nd, 1984. This time last year, just to refresh your memory, I like to do that every week, show how fast a year goes. I went into a lot of detail on the Los Angeles Police Department and their relationship to Western goals. Their spying that goes back into the 60s and 70s, the documents that were ordered destroyed and then placed in the hands of Larry McDonald, the head of the John Birch Society, Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, Mr. Wigner with associations to the BND, the Galen operation, and the high level of intelligence that goes throughout the nation into the various police departments and to data banks overseas. The Western goals will be in the news, unless it's settled out of court, one more time, because members of the community in Los Angeles through the Civil Liberties Union are suing them, and we'll update you on that information. There was a whole year where the Larry McDonald story in Western goals with the police department was suppressed, and the LAPD settled for their suit out of court at the end of the year, rather than have the information be put into the court records, and then it would be public. I'm going to run down a few of the topics that I am aware of in the news and that you are aware of because they touch areas that we have discussed at length the past years. Just to let you know that I am conscious that these things are breaking, but I'm not going to talk about them this evening. So I'm going to begin with running down the things that I'm not going to talk about, but they will be close to the back burner to catch up with eventually. Each one of these subjects deserves at least an hour and a half hour to update what is happening at this time. Before I run into those, though, I do want to mention the debate of Ronald Reagan. The news media, of course, was very kind to him. They'll say about anything that he wants them to say. The Los Angeles Times had a story today about the debate in Kansas City. It said there were no obvious gaffes by either man during the televised debate that came 16 days before the election. I don't know what they're talking about. I tape recorded the debate, and the transcript will be in the New York Times by tomorrow, and other papers also, but particularly the New York Times covers it. Did you hear Ronald Reagan say, just before the summation of his debate, he said, "Do you want to see America return to the policies of weakness of the last 4 years?" And then he realized what he had said. And he couldn't cover it up. And all the excuses and all the wandering and his getting off on a subject and then telling him his time was running out had to do with his catching himself knowing he said something wrong and not being able to make a joke and go back to it and say, "Oh, this reminds me of the campaign against Jimmy Carter and Mondale. They're so much alike. Their policies are so much alike. The weakness of those 4 years that I still think about it." Instead, he referred to his own 4 years of weakness, the policies of the last 4 years, and maybe the people who analyzed these debates were correct. Maybe that wasn't an error. Maybe he was just saying the truth and I missed the point. But I thought his mind does wander and he's not able to catch himself saying these things. He knows they're wrong and he's not astute on foreign policy. That won't stop him from getting elected. And I'll do a little bit on that next week, but he did make this horrible error, and it slipped by at least the news media that I saw today. It's only been one day. Now, there's 10 major stories. There's about 30, but if I told you what I wasn't going to talk about, it would take the whole hour. Just quickly, the subject of Mr. Rudolph, the Nazi from Dora, the concentration camp run by Peenemünde and Walter Dornberger and Wernher von Braun. Mr. Rudolph nicely left California in March of this year and settled in Germany. And his wife and daughter still have American citizenship. It was no surprise to me, Project Paperclip, that he came in under that guise of being a scientist. He was a scientist, but he was a war criminal. And they should not have been allowed, these people who ran these camps and made people work until they were dead, into the United States. There's been a big attempt to boycott the Soviet Union because they allegedly used slave labor on their gas pipeline. Nothing like the heroes that were decorated in this country. We'll do more on Project Paperclip very soon. Reagan and the Armageddon theology was in the front page of the Sunday New York Times this week and this morning in the San Francisco Chronicle. I refer back to my three broadcasts just 3 weeks ago before I went into Raymond Donovan. Actually, it was a continuous three-part series on the Armageddon, and there are some other tape cassettes put out by people doing research on this subject, and the links to the Defense Department of Jerry Falwell. We've gone away from the pulpit into the National Security Council, into the planning of mutual assured destruction and limited nuclear war. The attention is finally being called by various people in the church to the Ronald Reagan belief and theology, which is similar to the fundamentalist that he entertained in the White House July the 7th before the Republican convention, and they wrote the platform for the convention. Third, the CIA manual that urges selective violence to hire professional criminals. We've seen this in the United States continuously, the murders that I've talked about of witnesses to trials, people whose corporations were taken over, judges, actors, rock musicians. We have murder incorporated in this country. What is going on in Nicaragua is nothing new. We use criminals. Hitler used criminals. He let them out of the prisons, and we give parole to people to do murders on the outside. I've even talked with people from Folsom and Soledad who were supposed to be hired and released from prison to do murders. Another subject in the news last week that I haven't covered is a federal lawsuit of two former members of the Helionetics company suing Edward Teller and William Simon and Admiral Hayward for financial manipulations with the company. This is the first time that the father of the hydrogen bomb, Edward Teller, on the board of Western Goals, has been named as a defendant in the suit. It has to do with Bernard Katz, who set up Helionetics and set up a company called Zonix. And you remember, I will update that Zonix was the sister corporation to the group that was run by Dr. Earl Bryan, still is. Mrs. Edwin Meese gave him $16,000 right after the election, as soon as Ronald Reagan had been elected, and that began to open up the Meese tanglement of promotions and army benefits and other nefarious things that he was doing, but didn't touch the Bryan money or Helionetics getting into that. And that is subject to massive investigation and stock manipulation eventually. Playboy has an article this month, and I mentioned it before, advertised full page now in the papers this December. Playboy, a book coming out, Howard Hughes plans to buy the U.S. government. That's not in the past tense. The Hughes organization put into Wheeling and power Paul Laxalt, who is indeed the right-hand man of the Republican Party that's going to be reelected, and of Ronald Reagan, with the links to Nevada, New Jersey, and the Mafia, international Mafia. Paul Laxalt's scandals will surface after Reagan's elected. They're holding it up till after the election. This is the anniversary of the Grenada Blitzkrieg. I've wanted all year and haven't had time to do an update in three or four more broadcasts, which I will do as soon as possible, on Grenada. The important thing was that the students were not in danger. The airstrip was not for the Soviet Union or for Maurice Bishop to invade all of Central America as an offensive position. We've put $57 million allocated to the island. The Americans are not welcome. And 1 year later, Sir Eric Gary is ready to run the government. He was the close associate of Mr. Pinochet in Chile, to Papa Doc in Haiti, to the president of South Korea, and ran his goon squads. He is the mafia, the Nazi connections to our State Department, to Alexander Haig, Mr. Califano. He was put into power after carefully being coached in Miami and in Washington, and our armies wore the American helmet, which became the Nazi helmet, produced our Blitzkrieg, lied about the death figures, and kept the news media off. And now, because they were not allowed in Grenada, the Pentagon has laid terms. Okay, you can go to the next invasion, but we select who, when, and how we'll screen you. There also is a lot more information about Klaus Barbie. Jack Anderson had an article today, the people that protected him, justifying it, pretending they didn't know, some knew, went on to be university professors in this country. And it's 2 years this January since Barbie was pulled in, but the trial hasn't begun. It will link to the CIA, before the CIA, the intelligence establishment that had him, and then to the future CIA, and then the cocaine connections down in Central America. Barbie is a hot potato. They have him there, and they're waiting. It's been 2 years, and they're really afraid to bring him to trial. The CIA planes in El Salvador, that's not new. We have mercenaries, we have aircraft fighting these warfares against the guerrillas, in this case, protecting those 14 families who own all the land in El Salvador, spending 30, 40, 50, 100 million flying planes, losing soldiers, bombing the natives to keep the land in the hands of a handful of people. Maybe you heard Reagan talking in the debates about the Shah of Iran was going into land reform and dividing up the land among the peasants. That was a gross lie. It happened that the conditions when the Shah came in was that they import their food from the United States and make them dependent upon the United States, not that they use their food for the native population to grow and develop. That was all blocked off when the Shah was put in. And finally, there was a story in the Washington Times this week listing the 12 targets for defeat by the conservative think tanks. They did very well in the last elections and then before, got rid of the so-called liberal congressmen, and in a few years we will have a Congress and a Supreme Court identical to the one that Hitler had, where every person sitting in those seats will have been put in by the religious right, the church, and the Richard Vagary Young Americans for Freedom organization, the computers, that will knock out each individual congressman with a whammo and put in the conservatives in his place. Now I'm going to continue with part two of Raymond Donovan. Last week I left off with a chronology, and I said that I would continue with that this next week, but I am a promise breaker sometimes on account of the news, and I don't want to lose continuity of the Donovan story, the part I want to get across tonight. So the chronology will be updated or completed in 1 or 2 weeks, so you'll have a good overview. But I want to jump right now to some very important articles and books about people involved with Raymond Donovan, and again, ask the question, why was it so important for Ronald Reagan, with all the evidence there was about Donovan, to force the FBI, the Justice Department, and the hierarchy in Washington to go along with that appointment? It has to be one of the most important appointments for Ronald Reagan, and they took the chance that it wouldn't bring him down or rub off on to the administration. Reagan would have his fourth term. He's untouchable. There's the Teflon factor, and identical to the drama of Watergate, and I mentioned this before, but the Scotch tape was on the door, and it was removed by the people at the Democratic headquarters, and then another piece was put down, and the guard was able to get in to the hotel and call the police, and just in the nick of time, the top people going back from the Bay of Pigs, the Kennedy assassination, the Nixon administration, the Nixon nefarious teamwork with mafia, with Nazis, and so forth. These various characters going back before the Bay of Pigs, when Nixon was vice president, were all caught at that hotel. Now, there were 4 years of investigations from 1939 to 1943, and just because one particular witness began to tell the Bronx district attorney things that he told the confirmation hearing investigators of the FBI, he told the special prosecutors in June, he told Mr. Leon Silverman, and they all pretended that they didn't want to hear him, and finally somebody believed him. And so the very day that the statute of limitations would run off, Raymond Donovan and the members of his construction company, the Chiavone Company, and two people that worked with him who are charged with murder indictments, also the partners of Donovan who got contracts from him with drug smuggling and trafficking and very fine company. The arrest and the indictment came, as I say, just hours before the statute of limitations wore off. Joseph Kraft had a syndicated column October the 5th. The one I have here is from the Houston Post, rather, but it goes all over the country, called New Sleaze Chapter. And in it he says, if the Bronx indictment sticks, the whole administration is in trouble, for the case rests on evidence that has been strangely neglected rather than covered up by the FBI, the Justice Department, the White House, including Attorney General Designate Edwin Meese, and the President himself. As I mentioned last week, there hasn't been such a sweep since Watergate, where we had the Attorney General John Mitchell, the President Nixon, and L. Patrick Gray, the acting director of the FBI, and John Dean, the attorney for the president, and his top White House staff are out. And Joseph Kraft is saying that this, again, involves the new Attorney General, the President, the FBI, and the Justice Department. Those are very strong words. Among the other strong words was an article in the Washington Post by George Lardner. He's been covering the Donovan case for several years, October the 1st, 1984. He tells about the tap that was placed on the telephone of Mafia soldier William Maselli. I mentioned that last week, in January of 79. Now, the FBI, a team of agents, not one or two, a team, put a tap on the telephone and into the offices, the meatpacking offices of Maselli. This is what they picked up. He mentions an extraordinary productive surveillance came out. They churned up allegations and conversations of literally dozens of crimes, starting with murder, hijacking, kickbacks on government contracts, extortion, bribery, political corruption, fencing, narcotics trafficking, gambling, perjury, and more. I imagine the more is prostitution and pornography. I mean, what's left out of this? An example of narcotics trafficking is that Mr. Maselli went to jail for 7 years for passing off or trying to pass off $1 million of synthetic cocaine. Now, this article in Washington Post, Mr. Lardner says, not one of the 857 tape recordings compiled was ever played in any single open courtroom. This is yet to come out in the courtroom soon. The article, and I'll go into details about it later, but I just want to cover a certain train of thought and then go back to this story about the FBI handling of the wiretap. When the district attorney wanted the crime force in New York to get the FBI tapes that were to be released and given to the prosecutors, they were held up. And this article goes through a whole series of ways that the government held up these tapes. And then they quoted Jane Parver in the article. It said, at length, according to one account of Jane Parver, that when they heard of the major crimes the unit had for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, they already had those there in Manhattan, they were informed in late January that someone in the FBI in Washington, D.C., not in New York City, someone in Washington, D.C., had entered into certain secret agreements with congressmen and other public persons that the tapes would never be released. The tapes were called Operation Tum Con. Con would be convict. I don't know what the Tum is. Operation Tum Con were these tape recordings. They would never be released. And so when information came from William Orlando to the district attorney in the Bronx about how he murdered Mr. Maselli while he was working for the FBI, not murdered Maselli, Howard, murdered Mr. Frasconi, Salvatore Frasconi, when this information came, the district attorney wanted these tapes over again because Mr. Silverman had not used them. The Washington investigation of Donovan with the Senate had not used them, and the FBI, who made the tapes, did not use them for the confirmation hearing. So they were locked up in Washington. Of course, we don't know what secret agreements were made with which congressman, but they refer to this, and then it goes on to say that there's sufficient evidence that these secret agreements did take place, and there was reference to them at different times. Some denied it, and some admitted that they did exist. Now, the only person out of all of those tapes that ever was arrested was Maselli for the charge of hijacking and narcotics, even though he's discussing how he murdered Frasconi, his competitor, on the tapes. And they quickly brought him to justice, if you call it justice, 7 years for this crime of the $1 million of the heroin, the cocaine, synthetic cocaine, and so forth. But the FBI and the district attorney in Manhattan, they quickly went through the court hearings without introducing any of the tapes. By his pleading guilty, the tapes were never used. They were put back under seal. And somebody in the FBI in New York and in Washington, D.C., working with a congressman, was protecting these tapes. And the question is, again, why were they protecting these tapes? Now, the people who wanted Raymond Donovan as the Secretary of Labor were mentioned by Stephen Weissman October 3rd, 1984, in an article in New York Times called assessing the damage. He covers the White House, the Ronald Reagan White House, for the New York Times. And it said that Raymond Donovan came from what was a traditional, at one time, Democratic area, but he was a loyal conservative for Ronald Reagan. And at the time that he was made Secretary of the Labor, he won the confidence of such Reagan aides as William Casey, the director of the CIA, Edwin Meese, Lynn Nofziger, Reagan's longtime political advisor, and Helene von Damm, now ambassador to Vienna. I mentioned her last week. Now, those people would not want to put a president in who is up for re-election and get a cabinet appointment of someone as controversial as Donovan, with all the material about Donovan, unless this power block, going back, and they have a tremendous amount of power, Nofziger, Meese, von Damm, and Casey, have a not only power but links to Nazis, the Vatican, the dirty tricks. They had enough confidence that this case would never open up. Now, in the same article that Joseph Kraft talked about the possibility of sweeping in the president and Edwin Meese and the whole entourage in Washington, he tells about Ed Meese asking William Webster of the FBI in December about information linking Donovan to the mobsters. Did he have any? Which is kind of a crazy question, because they knew darn well it was public domain, a lot of the suggestions up to that point even. But Mr. Webster came back and said to Mr. Meese, Edwin Meese, that there were tapes of Donovan. Meese never heard them. They screened them for him. He said they heard tapes, and there was a vague reference to the case of Jimmy Hoffa. But the FBI didn't find any reason not to appoint Donovan as Secretary of Labor. Now, it turns out, and I'll give you the information on that, but you may as well know the punchline, that the man who killed Jimmy Hoffa was under contract to Raymond Donovan in the Chevillon Construction Company, so, and one of the top hitmen for the Genovese family and the mafia. So the all they said was the tape mentions Hoffa, but that's no reason not to appoint Donovan. Now, Jimmy Hoffa's attorney was that well-known William Taub. If you don't have the book Forces of Power, try and get it. I think research has it. In California, you can get in touch with Tom Davis and get the book Forces of Power. It's a very important book. And this Taub was the attorney for both the Vatican and Jimmy Hoffa, the connecting links of the Von Damm or the Casey or the Meese and Meese's Catholic background, or Donovan studying to be a priest and his links to the church. Taub is a very important link that I'll update more later with the Vatican and with Jimmy Hoffa. As a matter of fact, when I wrote the article on the Nazis and the murder of John Kennedy for Rebel just a year ago this November, I described William Taub as, and his New York office or home is on 60th Street, and his home address is the same as Democracy Under God on 60th Street. It's the same building. It's the office where Taub worked, and Taub was very close, as I wrote last year, to Cardinal Ottaviano of the Holy See, who way back in 1929 gave the Vatican $89 million to make sure it would be neutral. When Mussolini and Hitler would come to power, the money went into the Vatican Bank, and this became part of the fund that God's banker Michael Sindona was to invest, and Sindona puts it into Richard Nixon, and Licio Gelli puts it into Ronald Reagan. But Mr. Taub is a very important person, both, well, for many reasons, but right now his Vatican connections and to Jimmy Hoffa. Now, he was his attorney, and in the book Forces of Power, Taub writes about how his friend Hoffa, his client, was murdered, and he describes Anthony Tony Provenzano. Many of you know that name. He's now in jail now for having killed Anthony Castellitto. He's serving time there. The co-defendant in the trial of killing Castellitto was Salvatore Briguglio, the long friend of Raymond Donovan, who shared the Chevillon construction contracts. And Briguglio worked his way up into the Teamsters Union and was a hitman for the Genovese family and for various people in construction work and in mafia, the organized crime in New York and in New Jersey, or I guess wherever you wanted him to go. Now, the chapter on the end of Jimmy Hoffa also mentions that Hoffa was writing a book before he was murdered called Hoffa the Real Story, and in that he charges Mr. Fitzsimmons, who took over his place in the Teamsters Union, and he was let out of jail by Nixon and then gunned down, or garroted, rather, with his piano wire. This is the way it's described in this book. The book charges that Fitzsimmons conspired with John Dean of the White House and Charles Colson, who were going to keep Hoffa from gaining office. Now, the attorney for Mr. Donovan, again, when he was indicted in New York, is Mr. Bittman, who worked for Tony Lasowitz, Mr. Howard Hunt, John Dean, Charles Colson, doing under-the-table money. I'll do more on Bittman later, but the Watergate cover-up goes through the Hoffa murder to the promotion of people working with Donovan, the man who actually killed Hoffa, working with Donovan, and the book of Taubes goes into the chapter of how his friend Hoffa was murdered. And there was a fellow in prison who also was written up in Fortune magazine, May 1982, Mr. Picardo, who talked, after he was arrested, he talked about how Hoffa was murdered and gave information on Ralph Picardo. And he called up Mr. Taub, William Taub, and said about how Hoffa vanished. And he said, our friend Sally Bugs, that's Buguglio, and the other two bragged about murdering him. So a few years later, as I say, when he was supposed to be a witness at a trial, this Buguglio was gunned down in New York. But before he was gunned down, and while he was active as a hitman, he was working with Raymond Donovan and did manage to erase the power of Jimmy Hoffa, his life. And then in return, Fitzsimmons gave the boats of the Teamsters to Richard Nixon and to Ronald Reagan. That's why Paul Laxalt, with the same interests in common as these people and fundraising for the GOP, was so happy to announce that the Teamsters were supporting Ronald Reagan when Mr. Presser and his father and their whole family are wall-to-wall mafia contacts. Now, the Washington Post, going back to 1982, the current articles, as they say, Mr. Kraft is talking about Hoffa in 1984. In 1982, the Washington Post has the story of a person who rubbed up against Donovan and was about to sue him 10 years ago, except that his car was bumped into, he had an accident, his car was stolen, his papers were stolen, and he gave up. He's one of the lucky ones who lived and wasn't gunned down. His name is James J. Donelan, D-O-N-E-L-A-N. He worked with Donovan, knew him, fought with him. And he was giving testimony in the Senate hearings on the possible mob connections of Donovan that were cleared by the special prosecutor. And in the Washington Post 2 years ago, he said, Donovan and his company have been dogged with allegations of bid rigging in the past, most recently in connection with the unresolved charges linking Donovan to Salvatore Bruguglio. So Washington Post and George Lardner, several years ago, he's been covering these articles for a long time, had the details of the relationship of our Secretary of Labor to this hitman for the Genovese family, who evidently everybody knew in 1975 was the one who had gunned down Hoffa and had done other murders before, was indicted and questioned about other murders before. Now, last week I mentioned this woman, Jeannie, that was murdered, who was a friend of Bergoglio and Donovan. And the source was Fortune magazine. The article I had was New York Daily News, Thursday, May the 13th, 1982, about Secretary of Labor Raymond Donovan linked by an FBI informant to a friend named Jeannie who disappeared under mysterious circumstances. Remember, the Fred Farino is to be murdered in May of 82. To protect Raymond Donovan, the people said, and Nat Maselli was murdered. He was an informer for the FBI, working with the special prosecutor. There were death threats to the investigators in the Senate, and I mentioned this Jeannie who disappeared. And this brief article told about Donovan being close with Joan Torino and this Bruguglio and going down to Miami to the Super Bowl, and it has a strong link of Donovan to the Genovese crime family, the hit squads and the death squads. That was 2 years ago. And yet Raymond Donovan stayed on as Secretary of Labor and would have stayed on, as I say, unless under the hour, the very day that the statutes ran out, he was named. Now we'll take a 1 minute break from this discussion and go back Some more to Raymond Donovan and his links to the crime and how much the president knew, how much Helene Von Dahm and Edwin Meese and William Casey knew and kept him all this time, kept the tapes locked up, kept their fingers crossed, and hoped that none of this would come out. It is coming out, and it could be identical to Watergate, where Nixon got elected in 1972, November 72, but became unglued later in the year. It would require a special prosecutor to find out which congressmen are named in those tapes and who's covering it up. We'll take a 1-minute break and then go back to that subject.